It's only been 7 months, so we're going by 1 month per chapter. That's pretty fast for me. We've got to slow down. We're in Romans 7. Glad to see everyone here today. I hope we get some rain out of these clouds, don't y'all? All right, this is a really interesting section. I guess I can say that every time I start out. Romans 7 is a place where I often start with someone if I want to teach someone the gospel that's not a Christian. And I want to get their interest. You know, one of the things that I don't propose to be a successful teacher, but one of the things that a teacher has to do in order to be successful is you have to, I mean, I don't know how many people are here this morning. We're a little down. We probably have 140 or 50 or so here today. I don't know. But everybody's got something on your mind. You got things that you just got through talking to somebody about, or you got things that are happening in your life that just really are supreme in your mind. And in order to have a successful class, and then I have to gather everybody's mind up to the same place. And we have to all get within the same circle. And one of the ways to do that is to appeal to something that you relate to. And if you can't relate to the last part of Romans chapter 7, then I don't know what to do with you. Because to me, for a long time, it's like somebody went to my mailbox and opened my personal mail and started reading it. Whenever he talks about, I know what's right and what's good, and I want to do it, and I try to do it, but the good that I want to do, I'm not able to do, and the evil that I hate, this I keep on doing. And he just keeps hitting that from one side and another and another and another and another. And I'm just, boy, he just nails me every time I read it. And I realize how weak I am. And I'm not particularly a disciplined person anyway. There's few areas in my life that I am, but there's lots more areas that I'm not. And I wish that weren't true. Another way of saying that is some people find it easier to be good than other people. I don't know if you believe that or not, but you have a right to be wrong if you don't believe it. So anyway, there are some people that find it a lot easier to be good than others. Really. And some of you, it's not just a big chore. I don't mean to be perfect, but I mean to be good, to do what you're supposed to do. And then other people really fight. They really do. And one can't appreciate the other. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you find it easy to discipline yourself in an area you don't understand people, you look down on people and don't understand people who can't discipline themselves in that area. And then there are some other people who can discipline themselves in some area, and they look at you and they say, that person, if they wanted to, they could discipline themselves in that area. They could do that if they really wanted to. But you know, there are some things I really want to do in my life that I don't do very well. And you know, one of the things I keep coming back to is I've struggled with weight my whole life. And you know, it's just, there are some people, you know, I look at Glenn Addison and I want to shoot him. I mean, he can just eat anything he wants to eat. And he eats everything that I want to eat. And he eats all as much as I want to eat. And it just doesn't bother him at all, you know. And it's not fair, is it? Let's all gang up on him. He's right back there. Let's go get him. It's not that I don't know. It's not that I don't know that I need to, and it's not that I don't know how. I do know how. And, you know, and I can lose weight. I've proved that. I've lost about 800 or 900 pounds in my life. And I'm better at putting it back on than I am taking it off, however, you know. And as I, and that's just an illustration. We all are addicted to any sin. All sin is addictive. It really is. I mean, lying is addictive. It just becomes an easy way to accomplish something for people. Anything, everything, every sin is addictive. And that we mentioned last time that whenever we're talking about something, I don't know if you thought about it any during the week, but whenever we say, well, that's just human nature, did any of you run across somebody, did somebody say that this week, or did you find yourself saying that? Well, that's just human nature, or that's just natural to do that. Well, whatever it is you're talking about is sin. It is. We give it nice little names, but it's sin. Because we have something inside of us. And that's exactly what Paul is going to be talking about here, carnality. Before we go there, there's a passage. Sometimes you're studying along in a passage, and you know, you're just going with the flow of this, and you think you're really into this passage, and you really understand it, and then there is a little statement there that just flips your cart over. And upsets, and the apples just go everywhere. And you think, where in the world did this come from? Why did he put this in here? Well, hold your finger there at Romans chapter 7 and turn, of all places, to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, Paul is talking about the resurrection. And let's just start reading in about verse 50. And when we get there, you'll probably know what statement it is. I declare to you, I'm in 1 Corinthians 15:50. I declare to you, brothers, flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, nor does the perishable inherit the imperishable. Now, this is evidence of a bodily resurrection, that this body is going to come out of the tomb. Listen, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a flash or in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, the dead will be raised imperishable, and we shall be changed. That's those who are alive. For the perishable must clothe itself with the imperishable. Now, what is, in this context, the perishable? This body right here. This body. Must clothe itself with the imperishable. And the mortal with immortality. Mortal means subject to decay. When the perishable has been clothed with the imperishable and the mortal with immortality, then the saying that's written will come true. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Boy, won't that be true. Whenever the bodies are raised and they're changed into whatever God sees fit to change them into, then we will all know for sure and certain that death has been swallowed up in victory. Death is no big deal. God's a lot bigger. And boy, he conquered it, didn't he? And he enabled us to. And then we'll be able to say, oh, Hades, where is your victory? Oh, death, where's your sting? Now look at verse 56. The sting of death is sin. And the power of sin is what? Law. Now, that's interesting, folks. I mean, okay, it took me a long, long time to be able to handle the concept of a bodily resurrection. Really. I mean, I believed in the resurrection, whatever that meant. But when somebody just kept holding my feet to the fire on this passage right here, and whenever he'd say in verse 44, the natural body and there's a spiritual body and so forth, and talk about whenever it was planted, it was this. When it is raised, it will be this. And they kept saying, what is it? Well, it is this body. And so he's talking about a bodily resurrection. And you see, I, for some reason, because I guess I grew up in a Christian environment, I never had a problem with Jesus' bodily resurrection. That never really gave me a problem. I mean, I knew that when they went to the tomb and they walked in and the tomb was empty. And so that meant what? That Jesus' body had been raised. But somehow I never made the transition to my body being raised. Because my body's going to, you know, if more than likely it's going to decay to back to dust from whence it came. And so how, you know, and you have all the scenarios that somebody comes up with. You know, it's kind of like the guys who came to Jesus and they were having problems with the resurrection, didn't believe in it, and they said, well, hey, this guy's got a wife and he dies and his brother marries her and he dies and his brother, you know, on down. Well, whose wife's she going to be in the resurrection? And so they could throw that out to people as a, what do you call it, a conundrum, you know, one of those insolvable things, and they just, that would end the discussion. Whose wife's she going to be? Well, I don't know. You know, she's been married to all these brothers. Whose wife's she going to be? And so that was their argument to show how ridiculous the concept of a resurrection was. And to them, it proved that. And it did a pretty good job, evidently, until Jesus came along and he said, hey, hadn't you read the scriptures? Boy, that was an insult to those people that came to him. And he said, there's not going to be marriage in heaven. In this way, we're going to be like the angels. Now, he didn't say we're going to become an angel and grow wings. He didn't say angels had wings, by the way. But he didn't say we're going to become an angel. He said, but in this way, like the angels, we're not going to be married in heaven. And I come here, it took me a long time to be able to just say the words and be able to accept, I won't say understand, because I don't completely understand it at all, how a body can be dead for thousands of years and it can be resurrected. I don't know how he's going to do that, but he's going to do it. Okay? Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what he said, didn't he? We'll see him as he is and so forth. And if that wasn't enough for me to try to get my mind around, then he puts this in right here. The sting of death is sin. I can kind of get that. Okay? I think about that and I can think. I think the sting of death is sin. It's kind of like a snake and his venom. Okay? It's sin that brings death. Whenever that venom gets in you, it produces death. When sin is full blown, John will say it brings death. So I can kind of get that. But then he says the power of sin is the law. And that just flipped my cart over and all the apples fell out. You know, I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know. What does that mean? The power of sin is the law. Well, you connect that back here to what we studied last week and what we're looking at this time. When he talks about in Romans chapter 7, he said the law is not sin. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't have known what coveting was if the law hadn't said don't covet. And so the law taught me what coveting was, but then the law did something really weird. It made me covet. That's what he says here. Sin, seizing opportunity, I'm in 7:7. Sin, seizing the opportunity afforded by the commandment, produced in me every kind of covetous desire. For apart from law, what? Sin is dead. And he's not just talking about the law of Moses. What he's really talking about here is the law principle. The law principle. Yes, sir. That's right. Yeah, it creates in me all manner of evil desire or lusting. Right.
For you to be able to choose God.
Correct.
And so, I don't know if it's any more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Law is the power that gives the sin to you as a choice. And then you choose God.
And you could be right. It may be no more complicated than that, except I see this in this, what he's saying here, that law is not just a dormant thing that you can pick up or not. It through law, Satan brought a power of dominion, of control over a person. And I think that's what he's saying in this whole thing right here, that he's talking about what's going to rule over you? Who's going to be your master? Well, we say that sin is not going to be my master, but if you are devoted to law as a means of justification, then law gets twisted when it gets inside of us, whenever we start trying to use that law principle. And instead of producing what it should produce, it produces something else. Instead of when it says, don't touch, instead of it just making it totally repulsive to me to do that, then for some reason, some strange reason, it becomes attractive. You understand? Does that make sense? It's just, you know, don't do this or this is going to happen to you. And you think, well, man, there must be something really good here. You know, I need to look at this. I need, you know, and you hear people say how much fun it is to do this, to get drunk or to fornicate or whatever it is, and how much fun this is. And you just get to thinking, you know, I'm missing out. And young people really, you know, if you get older, then hopefully you get wiser. Some people do and some don't. But, you know, some of the polish and the attraction wears off, you know, because for one thing, if not in your own life, you see the lives of people that you love that are totally destroyed because they allowed themselves to be attracted to this, and how devastating that is to people's lives and to marriages and to homes. And, you know, if it's in your family and you see the pain and the hurt that comes from sin in one family person's life and how that passes on to, you know, others, then hopefully you get to the point that you're not as attracted to sin. And I think that's why it says God can't be tempted by sin, because he sees all the way to the end of it every time. He's not fooled by sin's tempting lies. And you know, when it says an old ad that said, you know, what was it? This is the product of the brewer's art. You remember those old commercials? And it was something about some alcohol. It was, I don't remember which particular brand it was, but it had this beautiful mountain scene with these rushing, cascading streams coming down, and said, this is the finished product of the brewer's art. That's not the finished product of the brewer's art. The finished product of the brewer's art is a broken home, or somebody that lies murdered, or somebody, some innocent mother and child that got killed by a drunk driver. That's the finished product of the brewer's art. Or really, the finished product is hell. That's the real. Now, I had two or three hands coming up. So.
Another perspective, I think, is like saying that sin is the primary weapon or tool of death, and that which energizes it, gives it effectiveness,
that's right,
enables it, is law.
That's right. And I'm saying, and I think that's a good, concise statement of it, and I'm saying that's hard for me to keep that in my mind. I don't know why, but that's hard for me to keep in my mind, because there, you know, even as much as I try to study about law, I slip in and out of it, and there's something about law that if we're not careful, isn't there something within us, even as Christians, that we tend to want to revert back to law? I mean, if you read the book of Galatians, that's the purpose that he wrote that book. We want to keep slipping back into law and thinking that we want to justify ourselves. Whatever, you had a comment.
Yeah, I was just thinking that law in general always has consequences if you break it. Doesn't matter if it's man's law, God's law, or the law of gravity. You know, you jump off a cliff, you're going to suffer the consequences of that decision and break the law of gravity.
Yeah.
If you go flying down Interstate 45 at 90 miles an hour, you're going to suffer the consequences of that decision breaking that law. And likewise, if you violate one of God's laws, you are going to suffer those consequences of those laws.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, in conjunction with that, and I smile when you said that, because you can always, when you go hunting or fishing or anything with somebody else, you always remember the mistakes they made or the things funny that happened to them, and you want to forget the things that you did. Well, I have a first cousin that, I won't say anything because it's on tape, but anyway, when he was younger, and we all watched Superman and, you know, whatever, well, he watched him, and he was so enthralled that he decided that if he wrapped a big towel around his neck and jumped off of their garage, then he could fly. And, I mean, he didn't hold anything back. He pitched off. He didn't just jump up with his feet down. He jumped flat out, okay, to fly. And it didn't matter how much he had persuaded himself he was going to fly. He didn't fly, okay? And he went to the hospital, okay? And so, you know, we can view law through some really, we can persuade ourselves about some things, about what we can do and what we can't do, but it doesn't matter what you believe. I mean, it's going to, it's going to have its way. Law is going to do what law does. Sin is going to do what sin does. And it doesn't change the consequences, does it? Doesn't change it? Yes, sir. Talk up loud as you can, sir. Not on the front end, is it? Yeah, that's right. Boy, don't you like talking about the younger generation? I do. I like it. I like it. And to become aware of the consequences of sin helps us to have a desire to get further away from it, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Any of you ever stuck your tongue to a metal ashtray? You know? Well, I didn't have to do that but twice. Okay. I just wasn't sure that the first time was for real, you know. But it was, you know. And so I don't even have any desire to do it anymore. You know. You had somebody else had something? Okay, we're in 7, and he's going to, this is really hard. The question that comes up in everybody's mind always is Paul talking about himself as a Christian, or is he talking about himself before he became a Christian, or is he talking about somebody else? Well, I'm going to let you decide that. I will say this. I think that whoever he's talking about, at whatever stage, if it's himself or whatever, then he hits me. Okay, I know that. And so, regardless of, here's what I think at this point in my study. I think he's talking about a carnal Christian. I think he's talking about a Christian who hasn't made that transition away from law like he should. And he still has an appeal. There's something in him that pulls him back. And until we make that transition, until we really make that transition, and we don't see it. That's the unfortunate part. We don't see it as being dangerous to have some law and some grace. But it is. It's a killer. And it robs you of what God wants you to have in your life. And he's going to get down to the end. He said, who's going to rescue me from this body of death? Well, what body of death is he talking about? He's talking about trying to be half in and half out of law. Trying to serve God and serve law, having two masters. Here's what it's like to have two masters. And it is torture to live that way. And some of you have known that. Maybe, to some degree, all of us have known it. What it's like to become a Christian and yet to be, to some degree, controlled by our sinful nature, by our attraction to law. And consequently to sin. And one of the things that comes out of this too is while we have to be educated, education is not the sole answer. And folks, it's not the sole answer to our moral dilemma in the United States of America. There are not so many pregnancies and abortions today because people don't know. You hear me? Now, there might be a remote case of someone who's not intelligent enough to perceive the information that's out there, okay? But there is much more than adequate information so that pregnancy apart from marriage could be completely obliterated. If the problem was education, we would have the problem solved. Now, we keep because it's convenient and because we don't really want to change our lifestyle, we keep saying it's the state's problem, it's the school's problem, it's somebody else's problem. We just have to educate people. Well, we do have to educate people, but that's not enough. That's essential, but it's not enough. My problem with sin is not that I don't know. That's not my problem. My problem is that there's a part of me that doesn't want to do it. And sometimes I give in to that me. My problem is there's two me's alive in here, and they're well. Hopefully one of them is sicker than he used to be, and he's not as strong as he used to be.